Welcome to this very special edition of the KJ Masterclass Live, the show which ensures that you profit from your time spent here with experts, either through their industry insights, information, or simply learning from them. And today we have Jonathan Labman. He is a licensed professional counselor, author, and enlightenment guide. Welcome to the show, John.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, AJ. Thanks for having me.
You are welcome to the show, John. You are welcome to India in this online form. And I'm sure not just in India, but a lot of people will benefit from what we will be talking about. We'll talk about spirituality. We'll talk about enlightenment. We will also talk about your books, and we'll talk about so many things. So my first question to you, John, is to understand. You talk about, you want people to enjoy being human, and you want to help wake them up. And you talk about, so being human, you know, what is this being human all about? Means I want to understand, I understand it, but I want to understand your perspective, because your book is also based around the same topic.
Well, I think it's important to figure out how to navigate this vehicle we call the human being and the human body. If we get too tied up in our thoughts and our emotions, then it's very difficult to find any space to see the awareness or the consciousness that's underlying all thought and feeling. So what I see in my office is that most people that arrive here, even if they don't have really serious mental health problems, they don't know that most of their thoughts are inaccurate or untruthful or just plain false. They also don't know that a lot of the emotion that they feel, particularly the negative emotion that they feel, comes from these false thoughts. So one of the first things that I try to do is to teach people to question whether their thoughts are actually true, and also to look for where their emotions are coming from. Are they coming from a real event like, yeah, I was just in a car accident, and so I'm really shaken up, and I'm very sad, and I'm frightened? Or have I just made that up in my head, as if I'm an actor walking onto the stage, and I'm having all of this emotion based on something that's a falsehood? So I think until we master some of those basic skills about how to be human beings, very difficult for us to have enough bandwidth or enough space within our being to investigate some of the deeper truths that really mostly come out of India and Nepal, right? I mean, the spiritual enlightenment paths your country is famous for them, and both the Buddhist and Hindu tradition that have influenced my path a great deal, and we think maybe even the Christian tradition, because we think maybe Jesus was in India during his youth, a lot of that comes from where you sit. But until we know kind of what's in our way, it's really hard to get to the fundamentals of what makes us fully human and fully divine.
Absolutely, John. Well put. Now, I asked you about what is about being human. So being human is also about having a brain. So why do people are stupid about their emotions? Why do you... why you say that, 90% to 95% of our thoughts are false because we create them. So Are we stupid and at the same time being human? Did God made humans to be stupid, or we have cultivated the thing called stupidity in ourselves? Help us understand this.
I think this is not what we would call intellectual stupidity. I think it's what we would call ignorance. We have not been taught these basic things about being human. We don't learn them in school, and we don't learn them often at home because our parents don't know them either. So it's not that we have been made stupid. It's that humans are ignorant because they haven't been taught about some of these basic things. And I think once we are taught, then we manage our own lives much better. And then, again, we have the bandwidth to dive deeper and discover the awareness that's beneath thought and emotion and physical sensation. So no, it would be a mistake for me to say that people are stupid. It's that in modern education, we're educated in practical and material matters, but we're not educated in how do I be a human being, right? How do I deal with my thoughts and my feelings? How do I understand that a lot of the thought, by the way, it's just generated automatically in our minds. There's nobody in there cranking thoughts out like a Xerox machine, you know? So that's why I say it's we're not taught. It's not that we're foolish or we're intellectually stupid. It's that we're ignorant because this is not given to us in our education. And I think it's very fundamental to waking up that people understand themselves. You know, how do I deal with my physical sensations, my emotions, and my thoughts?
Right, John. So what is this waking up all about? There is already a woke movement going on. Is that waking up all about? Or is it something else? Help us
understand. No, the woke movement is more a political movement. That's a very good question, AJ. Wonderful question. And, you know, I have on my license plate, I made a vanity plate many years ago and it says, awaken you. And I worry that people will think that means that I'm woke. But that's really, that's something that the right-wing conservative, let's not blame the libertarians. Right-wing conservative United States politicians throw at left-wing progressive liberal people because they think that their policy, the liberals think that they're so awake, but actually they're only awake to certain political things and not, that doesn't have anything to do with the awakening in the Enlightenment traditions of India.
Right, John. Right. So how can then people, actually wake up or get awakened in the true sense? What is it for? Is it to be more intellectually inclined or is it to understand the world better? Is it to understand universe better? Is it to understand God better? Or is it to understand themselves better and to understand humanity better?
Well, all of that will result from spiritual awakening eventually. So what I mean is that there is underneath of all experience something that's experiencing it. So even though we might think, oh, I am the chattering voice in my head that calls itself I and me, actually, there's an awareness deeper than that you notice when you begin to learn to meditate or when you're at the seaside just listening to the waves. There's an awareness that's aware of thought when it arises. And that's very useful if we want to determine if the thought is true or false, just to begin with. But that awareness, once it's experienced, begins to change the center of gravity from the chattering voice in my head to this, in a sense, this vast presence that has no boundaries in time or space. And we as human beings, once we learn to meditate or to be mindful or to be present, we can experience this vast presence in everyday life all the time. And we can understand that that's what we are, not just thoughts and feelings and sensations. So that the human body is, yes, the vehicle for this transmission of consciousness, and the seat of consciousness is in the body. But the body is not just the physical sensations, emotions, and thoughts. And so that's the first discovery is, this awareness in me. I love the Mandukya Upanishad, which says in its summary, this individual consciousness is Brahman, is God itself, we would say in the West, is the transcendent, the great Brahman. Right, I am Atman Brahman, and that's my poor English way of saying what you'll be able to say in Sanskrit probably a lot better. Maybe you could say it for the audience for us.
Yeah, I don't know Sanskrit. There are many people who know Sanskrit. For that, you need to learn. I know Hindi, and some of the things, I do understand. But just because I'm in India, I may not be That intellectual, I know a few things, and you know, I really appreciate the way you have, you know, several times talked about the body. You know, body is actually a temple if you look at it that way. And through that, if you look at it as a temple, then you can go anywhere, reach anywhere. And the biggest thing you can do is you can travel with it. You know, it's the biggest vehicle that one can get. Buddha did not get enlightenment just by sitting under the Bodhi tree. He got enlightened because he traveled within. So I want to understand that how is it that general people can get to this level of, you know, understanding about things. You talk about eliminating unnecessary suffering. Right. What is this? Is it maybe they will understand the benefits of waking up in the true sense because it is profitable there. Help us understand about unnecessary suffering. What is necessary suffering? What is unnecessary suffering?
So necessary suffering, you might call the ordinary pain of being a human being, you know. So waking up in the morning and realizing that I, you know, spent 3 hours in my permaculture garden yesterday and then my back hurts. And that's sort of ordinary pain. Now, if I resist the pain, or if I think that it shouldn't be there, or I start cursing about the pain, now suddenly I've crossed the divide into unnecessary suffering. I'm resisting what's arising. So I like to say that the unnecessary suffering is our inner three-year-old. You know, when we are 2 or 3 years old, we learn to say no to our parents and what they ask us to do and to everything else. And eventually we are saying no internally almost all the time. This is one of the things that's said to create the ego, which is just a resistance to the way life is arising. And so that to me is unnecessary suffering, which is to say, all right, I have the ordinary needs of a human being. I need to drink water. I need to breathe air. I need to eat food. I need sleep. I need exercise. And, you know, that's not going to go away. So if I'm railing against that, if I'm fighting against that all the time, that creates unnecessary suffering. And the mind creating these false thoughts that create a lot of negative emotion, that is also unnecessary suffering, AJ. And so I think those things, one of the things that awareness, when the center of gravity changes from thinking that we live in our heads and we are the little voice in our head, to understanding the awareness that we are that's deeper than the little voice in our head, the awareness that automatically registers everything arising. And then we begin to explore that awareness. When that center of gravity changes, we stop a fundamental resistance to reality, and that stops a lot of suffering right there. We no longer distinguish ourselves as this little voice. We understand that we're the awareness, that the awareness is the transcendent, that it's everywhere. And we are suddenly no longer alone, which takes away a lot of suffering. We're not isolated anymore. We're actually continuous with everything around us. And so, I mean, the Buddha said that enlightenment was the end of all suffering. And, you know, those teachers that I've had that are related to people in India, some of whom were students of Papaji, of H.W.L. Punja, who was a student of Ramana Maharshi, you know, they would tell us that, you know, as the center of gravity shifts and you become that awareness, you're no longer in conflict with everything and everyone all the time. You're now beginning to be in harmony with what you really are and what the universe is, which is an expression of Brahman. And so that begins to eliminate suffering. And then when you're not identified with the mind and its chatter and with your kind of customary emotion, maybe you thought of yourself as an anxious person, when you're no longer identified with those things, then it's easier to see that those patterns are only patterns. They're not your identity. And those patterns can be dissolved and let go of. So you're much more spontaneously arising in each moment which is another sort of way to understand enlightenment, or at least spiritual awakening. I won't claim to be fully enlightened. I don't know that anybody is fully enlightened, right? We're in that direction. We go in that direction at any rate. And so we're on that path, and we hope, you know, when we reach the end of our lives, we hope that we've fulfilled that, and that we perhaps, maybe we come back as a teacher the next time, or maybe we don't have to come back here at all. The incarnation, the reincarnation cycle is broken.
Absolutely. Absolutely. As long as we keep learning, as long as we keep walking, I think that whole, you know, we all understand the whole process of birth and death and the end of this whole cycle and getting back to be a part of the Paramatma, or, you know, Brahma.
Right.
That way. So I want to understand, you talk a lot about this Eastern path to enlightenment. How did you come to know and get into this? A lot of people know about it. It's not about the Eastern or the Western part. All knowledge belongs to humanity. It all depends on who understands things better and in what way. So anything particular. But I'm curious to understand for the audience, you know, how did you come to know, and how, what actually got you much more, so much deep? You talked about Buddha. You talked about, you know, the Atma. Those lines were actually, you know, if I understand, though, Lord Krishna spoke a lot of things, almost like Lord Krishna was speaking in the Gita. So tell us about this whole journey, a bit of about this whole understanding of the Eastern path.
Well, the when I was in my middle 30s, I went to New York City to study acting. I was a trained singer, and I had a couple of Broadway vocal coaches who were telling me that I could work on Broadway, but that I would need to come to New York and learn to do the method acting. And in the method acting, you learned how to be living in the moment on the stage, you know, and not that I was ever on the stage, but the living in the moment was probably the most exciting and the most vividly alive I ever felt until that time. Because prior to that, I had been a bit raised in a Reformed Jewish family, very liberal, not very strict. Then I became a very strict evangelical Christian. And then I lived in a cult for a number of years. When I left that, I opened my eyes and started to explore many things. And I went to New York and studied acting. Well, I decided I didn't want to be an actor. But one of my voice teachers called me when I was living in Philadelphia and said, there are people here that I've just met who have been trained by a student of Sri Bhagavan Rajneesh. And they're here teaching you to live in the moment in your whole life, not just on the stage. And I was immediately enthralled, because I'd been a believer in the divine since I was 16, because of what I considered a miracle at that time. I don't know if your listeners would. And so I started studying with these people. Shaya and Ariel Kane were their names. Their teacher was Paul Lowe. He was called Tirtha by Osho. And I learned about living in the present moment, and I learned about meditation and started practicing meditation. And from there, I was with those people for a while. Eventually, I left New York City because I didn't want the noise anymore. And I moved out to Pennsylvania, and I started studying yoga. And my yoga teacher was from an Indian family. And so she taught us some basic Sanskrit pronunciation. She introduced us to some of the Upanishads and the sacred texts of India, the Vedas. She brought an Ayurvedic healer to the yoga center. I eventually had my office there. I became a yoga teacher after I got my graduate degree in psychology when I was 45. At 46, I got my certification as a yoga teacher. I began to teach meditation. And at that point, I also met some people who had other teachers, but they were all from the Eastern traditions after that point. And these people introduced me to the spiritual awakening process, helped me into and through that process. And I worked with them for a good number of years, off and on for another 15 years. Eventually, I worked with a student of Muktananda's whose name was David LaChapelle. And I worked with one of Papaji's students whose name was Krishna Gauchi. And I worked with modern spiritual master whose name is Adyashanti, who came from the Buddhist tradition. And so with all of these people and many more, including, well, there's too many to mention, I've read and studied from the Buddhist and the Hindu traditions and worked with a number of people, including people who come from Avatar traditions in India, and now also some people who studied with Ram Dass. So there have been many different teachers. I tend to be quite eclectic and didn't really just stick with one. But also, when I was 16, I had an international education. I was in the United Kingdom for 2 years with, by the way, some students from India. And so it was natural for me to look for the similarities in all these spiritual traditions. And that's how I come to be here very briefly.
Wonderful, wonderful. You are a very learned man. You are an enlightened man. You know about so many things which a lot of people staying here. It is about learning. It is about traveling within. And the quest for knowledge is the biggest travel that anyone can have. Lord Buddha actually went down in the quest of knowledge.
That's right.
Because he had certain questions in his mind. He wanted those answers. And he traveled a lot till he traveled within. So I want to understand a bit more about it. You have written 4 books, and 3 of which are on how to wake up spiritually and move towards full enlightenment. What do your books talk about? What is it that you talk about in all these books? Are they 3 different books? Have you tackled on different? Tell us a bit about your books.
Well, I wrote a memoir about my whole journey, which isn't a teaching on enlightenment. It's just about my early history. And then, you know, the first book that I wrote is called, Taming the Three-Ring Circus of Your Mind. And because I was a very anxious person and I had a lot of thoughts all the time, I learned from a woman whose name was Byron Katie, who wrote a book called Loving What Is, that there was a way to challenge the thoughts of the mind. Of course, we know this as professional counselors. We call it cognitive behavioral therapy. And I wanted to write a very simple guide for my students and clients, which would teach them how to challenge their own thoughts, what I call thought busting, like smashing up the thoughts. And so that was the first book. The second book was an early attempt to write some very simple things about the spiritual path. And then later I thought, well, this isn't a very well written book, honestly. Let me write a book again and get it professionally edited this time and have some real paintings in the book there's a local friend of mine here who's a really fine artist. And that was the book called Being Human and Waking Up, which was published in September. And that book really runs through everything that I've learned and taught to my students and clients. So it starts out with a lot of information about how to work with your thoughts, a lot of information about working with your emotions, and then also how to meditate. I teach people how to meditate in the book. I also have space in the book for people to write things that they're thinking about and learning about. And eventually, I describe the initial awakening experience and how people can experience that. And very, very simple practices that I teach. I teach basic breath-focused meditation, and I teach how to be present in the moment, you know, how to pay attention more to the sensory information or the sense gates, more than to the thoughts, which are often false and misleading. And all of that leads to the potential to explore the awareness that's deeper than our thoughts. And exploring that awareness leads to the initial spiritual awakening. And that's where the book ends. So that's what the books were about. The first two were sort of attempts to summarize things very briefly. And this last one, I just thought, okay, just let me lay it out for everybody in as much detail as I can. And try to keep it simple, though. I don't use a lot of fancy words. I don't use a lot of big intellectual concepts because I don't find that they're very helpful to people when they're struggling with difficult emotion or trauma, all those things.
Absolutely, absolutely. All these big words, complicated words are helpful to none, not even the dictionary. Nobody looks at them.
I know. You know?
Yeah. So coming to your, you know, understanding of all these things, I want to understand, you are a licensed professional counselor. You are also an enlightenment guide.
Yes.
So what is it that people get drawn to? And how do you, because you talk about the Eastern system of things, about Buddha, how, when you talk to these people, how are you able to help them understand things? Is it about the enlightenment, or is it about thing? I want to understand those interactions, how, what they seek, and how do you explain them what you know so profoundly?
Well, so what I learned quite quickly after my initial spiritual awakening was that there aren't many people that were coming to me for counseling that were interested in enlightenment, but there are some. And so with the people who are interested in, oh, my life is broken, I need to fix it, or I've had severe childhood trauma and I'm suffering from terrible anxiety and flashbacks and I have anger problems, those people I work with, in a sense, using the first part of my book. And now, when I first started working, meditation and mindfulness were not used in psychology generally. Around 2000, that was sort of what was considered new age spirituality here in the United States. But I taught people to meditate and I taught people how to be present because I knew that that would calm them down. And when I became a specialist in trauma treatment, which I studied in from 2010 to 2013, then I understood that I could help people who'd had severe trauma also to calm down and to live a normal life. And then when people come to me and they're specifically looking for spiritual awakening, enlightenment, or they're interested in everything, they're interested in psychological awareness and spiritual awareness, then I put everything together for them. So it's very much dependent on who's in front of me. I'm not here to force anybody to learn anything they don't want to learn, because that would be another kind of violence. And the first of the yamas and niyamas is ahimsa, which is nonviolence. So even in the practice of psychology and being an enlightenment guide, I don't want to be pushing an agenda on anybody, because that isn't the way people awaken. That's the way they become cult members, but that's not the way they awaken.
So absolutely. You have profound knowledge, and we talk of ahimsa and all these things. Now you are already so, you know, aware of things. So I'm intrigued to, you know, to understand from you, what is it that you seek now, Jonathan?
Well, right now I'm working on understanding that there is, well, I actually have recently come into the understanding that there is no self separate from everything else arising. That awareness and what is, awareness is actually just a concept. And if I look at experience, oh, my screen went dark. Oh, there we go. If I look at experience, there's no way to separate a me from the experience of everything arising. So I'm clarifying more of that within this body mind over here. But also I'm approaching 70 years old. I'm going to be 70 in about 11 months. And for the last part of my life, I would like to teach others what I've learned and to help, as I have in these last two dozen years with my psychological clients, but I would like to help more people who are interested in waking up, to wake up spiritually, because to me, that's the pinnacle of human condition, of the human condition, is to be spiritually awake and then headed for the ultimate enlightenment, knowing that this is Brahman itself right here and right there, right? There's no difference. And so that's what I hope to do now. And, you know, fortunately, I'm in a position where I, you know, the house is paid for, the cars are paid for, I'm old enough that, you know, that's okay, that's stable. And so I can offer some scholarships sometimes to people who don't have a lot of money. And I can work, you know, I do a satsang here in the office once a month, and it's free to everybody who wants to come. So I'm hoping to do more of those kinds of things. And one of the reasons I started doing podcasts, I'm actually, I'm a little bit shy, which is why I never decided to perform on Broadway. But I want people to know that this is available for them. And the world is in such chaos right now. People need to know that their Brahman itself, whether they die in this chaos, whether they have a difficult time in it, they can still survive all of this. And they will. And they can survive it and thrive, yeah, with necessary pain of living, but not with unnecessary suffering.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You have put it very well, Jonathan. A lot of people would want to understand these things better from you, understand you better, and also about the things that you have done in terms of books and the things that you are doing. So what is the best way for them to connect with you?
They can go to my website, which is just, it's basically all one word, Simply Awake, SimplyAwake.com. They'll find out there that how they can contact me. And if they want to go to find the books, that's easy. That's Amazon.com. The books are available there under my name, Jonathan Labman. I also write a twice weekly column on Substack.com, which is called Wise Guy. We have in American culture a series of sort of, well, they're really short films, but and there was they were a bunch of guys that just made fun of each other all the time, and the leader of the pack was always calling them wise guys. So I thought a little humor is not a bad idea when you're purporting to teach people spiritual awakening. You don't want to take yourself too seriously because there's nothing here to take seriously. So I call it Wise Guy. So they can find me there on Substack.com at Wise Guy. So that's wonderful. It, AJ. Thank you for asking about that.
Wonderful. Wonderful. With all this wisdom, on this note of all this wisdom, it's a wrap on this very special edition of the KJ Masterclass Live. Thank you so much indeed for joining us.
Thank you, AJ. It's such a pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much. Bye-bye now.